Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. And this is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, I was about to say the Spartans. We just spent the last 5 minutes talking about that game. But the Lions, on the other hand, came away with a 13-10 victory this past Sunday over the Los Angeles Chargers. Somewhat uninspiring. We'll get into that in a moment. We'll start with our injury report, as we always do. Worth noting, Ziggy Ansah is not on it. I don't know if he is on Seattle's.
He was inactive last week.
What am I going to see? It's continuing. The tradition continues.
Yeah, unfortunate.
But sadly for us, Jared Davis with his ankle, still not available.
Yeah, but he's with the ones now. He's getting back in the mix. He's participating quite a bit at practice today. He did a lot last week, and then it tapered off on Friday. So it's still possible that they're going to push him hard Wednesday, Thursday, and then let him taper off on Friday again. But if he's able to play on Friday, pretty good indicator that he might be able to play on Sunday too.
If he plays, does he play the mic?
Yeah.
Or does he play? All right.
100%. Yeah.
Where does Tavai play?
Will
he start or will he be coming off the bench?
I think from a technical standpoint, Christian Jones will be the other starter. But I do think Tavai has earned enough to warrant being out there more than Christian Jones. Now, if you look at...
So is the comfort field there to play Tavai over in Jones's position when he had been handling most of the mic duties over the first 2 weeks?
Yeah, I think so, because he's been switching between Mike and Will the whole time since spring. And in this system, there's not that much of a variation between the Mike and the Will. The big difference is that the Mike has a little bit more responsibility. So actually, by putting Tavai at Will, he'll have actually less responsibility than he currently does. And in the training camp, they would flip Jared Davis and Tavai between the Mike and Will. And so it's not uncommon to see that happen again either. So there's the positions are so closely related that I don't think there's an issue playing either one at either spot. Christian Jones has been the guy getting the most snaps through the first 2 weeks, but Tavai has been the one that's been producing more. He's been making more impactful plays, and I think it's just going to be too difficult to keep Tavai on the bench.
All right, next up is Deshaun Hand with his elbow. Are we any closer to seeing him again?
Nah, yeah, we're closer, but I don't think he's going to be on the field.
I guess
Sunday.
I shouldn't have said it that way, because we're always closer to seeing him, I guess, when they're
The thing with Deshaun is he's made consistent improvement on a daily basis and a week-to-week basis as well. So we're seeing what we want to see, but this is a slow process, especially when you're talking about a joint. An upper body, an elbow joint that is a critical piece for a lineman.
Taylor Decker's still out with his back. Maybe we want him out for a few more weeks.
He's back with the ones, but he was with the ones on last Wednesday, and then he tapered off on Thursday and then tapered off more on Friday. So again, he's a guy that we'll have to monitor and see how he goes as the week goes. If not, then they might go back to Crosby. And
I don't know if we're going to talk about this coming up.
We can talk about it right now.
He didn't fare that poorly.
Nope. He allowed 2 pressures and 0 sacks.
Yeah, against Bosa and Ingram.
Right. Now they...
After looking so terrible in the preseason.
So terrible. Right, yeah. I mean, look, I wrote this in my mailbag on Saturday, and we talked about it a little bit on the podcast. Mostly we thought Decker was going to play at the time of the podcast, but... Crosby had struggled, and I jokingly said maybe he's a gamer, and I don't think that's what it was, but I think
they found a way to protect him.
I agree.
Yeah, so they found a way to protect him. He probably was really well prepared, and they probably didn't make him do too many crazy things, which I don't think they make their offensive linemen do anyways.
They gave him help early, and then they slowly removed the help as he found success. And he was very
good. The weaknesses,
right? But he played well enough that they were able to pull it back as well, which is nice. So
it was shocking.
The talent has always been there. It just was he was technically missing previously, and it seemed to come together for him on Sunday, which was very nice to see. I still think they would prefer to go with Decker.
You always rather go with their ones.
Right. But it's nice to see Crosby getting back in the groove here.
Yeah, and we'll see. We'll really see something if he plays again next week, this Sunday, and looks the same. Hopefully he gives up fewer pressures. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, C.J. Moore with his heel. That could be a nasty, lingering injury.
Yeah, you know, the thing with C.J. is that, with any injured player, is that if they have a significant injury, they don't talk to the media, right? When Jared Davis was hurt at the end of the preseason, he was not accessible to the media. When he was out there the first week of the season, he was not accessible to the media. But it's only when he came back that they allowed him to start talking to the media again. And so the Lions have a way of, you know, the holding back their injured players when it's significant, but as it becomes closer to them playing, they then allow the media to talk to them. And with CJ, I talked to CJ right after the game without an issue. I think if he was really significantly injured, he wouldn't even have been available. So the fact that he was tells me it's hopefully shouldn't be something that lingers.
And then why do we talk about CJ Moore? Who really cares? Well, he had 19 snaps on special teams, which is most among all Lions players.
Second week in a row he did that.
And there were only 22 total special teams plays on Sunday. So he's a valuable portion of our special teams. Now, let's move on to the roster moves. There's a couple big ones that we need to focus on. Number one is the release of C.J. Anderson.
So one of the things that I think was clear to most people watching that game on Sunday was
he's too heavy.
And Ty Johnson was getting preferential treatment over him.
He's got a little bit of a burst. Ty Johnson does.
He's got good burst, good long speed. The vision is improving every week. He got the ball first. He got the ball more, and he produced more. Each of them had 5 carries. In C.J. Anderson's 5 carries, he produced 8 yards. In Ty Johnson's 5 carries, he produced 30 yards. So he's out snapping them, he's out producing them, he's getting the ball more. And what does that tell you? It tells you he's past C.J. Anderson on the depth chart. And C.J. Anderson has talked all offseason about wanting to be in a situation where he can contribute and where he's going to be a factor in a running game.
And he better go sit on his couch for 10 weeks. I'll get into that. Well, all right, because he'll come in late in the season for a contender such as he did for that Los Angeles Rams last year.
Sure.
And he'll be fresh.
Sure.
And all the other players in the league will be a little slowed down. Mm-hmm. And this bowling ball of a running back can come in at 100% and make a difference. I mean, as we saw it last year, maybe he was in a little better shape as well. My question to you would be, is Bob Quinn telling him or Zach Zennert to stay in shape on their couch?
I would say Zenner, because the thing is
it's over between us and C.J. Anderson.
Well, you know, Anderson has made it clear that he wants to be a contributor, and it's my understanding from what I've heard is that he would not have been satisfied being the third running back option, and I don't want to say he would have become problematic, but I think there was a worry that maybe he would have become problematic, because that's what happened in Carolina. But he was not. He would not have been happy as the third option, and it was very clear after the game. You could tell that it was Ty Johnson time now, and he was in a role that I think they were concerned about, and they didn't want to create problems, and so they said, "Got an opportunity to pick up a guy that we want, and we'll move on from CJ before it becomes an issue."
The guy that they want is running back Paul Perkins from the New York Giants.
Former starter as a rookie, right?
Well, had like one 100-yard game against the Redskins.
Sure.
Hasn't put up massive stats in his career.
No, for sure. And there was a reason that they drafted Saquon Barkley. And then he has a pec injury, and that reduces his workload. And now he's fighting for a roster position.
Scraps.
And then he ends up getting cut. Now, the Lions claimed him off of waivers, which is why they had to make a like a 4 o'clock move essentially for CJ to release CJ Anderson, but they acquire Paul Perkins. Now Perkins was very good at UCLA and
1,300 and a 1,500-yard rushing season.
And you could see some of the skills that would make him a good rotational back, But I think the expectation of him coming in and being a lead RB1 was not realistic. And I think the Giants relied on him as a rookie for that because they were limited on options that year. And so I think the expectations were too high for him there. He has a nice jump cut. He has good long speed, not great long speed. He's shifty laterally. He can catch the ball. He's decent in pass protection. He's not going to be a kick returner or anything like that on special teams. He'll have to contribute. I don't know exactly where. My guess is that he will be behind J.D. McKissic at the beginning here. And he'll start out as an RB4 and could be inactive on game day.
Well, yeah, this week for sure, because he won't have that much playing time in by then. All right, the other big move was the signing of quarterback Jeff Driscoll, which forced them to release quarterback Josh Johnson. A little shocking. Now we have no experience backing up. Well, we have some football playing experience, but not this system experience backing up Matthew Stafford this weekend.
So Driscoll went to Florida.
Yeah, he was terrible at Florida. Yeah. Although he had one season, he led them to an 11-2 year. They lost to Louisville in the bowl game, or they beat him. I can't remember. That was it. And then had a huge year at Louisiana Tech. Sorry. No. You're probably going to get to all this.
No. Those are, I was just going to say he was expected to replace Tim Tebow, right?
Big shoes to fill.
Exactly. They said, he's going to be the next Tim Tebow at Florida. And then he was not. And like you said, he struggled in different parts. He ended up transferring to La Tech as a graduate senior. Played well at La Tech.
4,000 yards passing.
Drafted by the 49ers, and then got some experience there. He's bounced around since then. Where was he most recently? I'm completely blanking on it.
Cincinnati?
Thank you. Yep, he was in Cincinnati last year. When Dalton got hurt, he was started 4 games for them.
Yeah.
Not super numbers, but he's as athletic as Josh Johnson was, right? He can run the read option. He can throw the ball. He's big. He's got some speed to him. But you know, I don't know. I don't know if he's any better than Blau. To be honest, he's not.
We really don't know anything about David Blau.
I mean, he's really
get the ball to Rondale Moore. That's it.
But Driscoll is a guy that a lot of teams, I think, probably could have, you know, would have been interested in. He's definitely a backup. I don't think you're ever going to want him to start, but I don't know. I mean, they must have seen something they liked to move on from Josh Johnson and then to bring him in, especially with they must have really been confident in Blau as well. They must have seen something over the last 2 weeks that gave them confidence in moving on from Josh.
All right. And then, oh, wait, perfect week for Matthew Stafford to get hurt is this week. All right, this is worth noting. And we don't know who the number 2 quarterback is, and we may not know till Sunday.
Yeah, and, you know, even if we do, like, if it's Driscoll who's the number 2, and that means Blau would be inactive, but if Blau is active and Driscoll's not, that still doesn't mean Blau's the number 2, because Driscoll's only been in the system for a couple of days, right?
More comfortable knowing the playbook.
Exactly. So I don't think we'll know who the real number 2 is for a while.
All right, and then finally some practice squad fodder.
Yeah.
Nick Brossett was released to make room for Eric Lee, who we saw a ton of in the preseason. Then Brossett, in turn, was brought back, and Jonathan Wynn was blown out.
Yeah, that happened today. So Brossett spent 24 hours on the practice squad, and then they brought him back, and now he's, 12 hours into his second stint on the practice squad. We'll see if he lasts there. But we talked about Brossett a little bit last time, so that's just a technical move for the listeners here.
All right. We're done with all the roster procedural stuff. Let's talk about the Chargers game, the 13-10 win.
Mm-hmm.
Fired up. We're still undefeated, 1-0-1.
Yes.
Second place, all alone in second place in the NFC North. All this is meaningless 2 weeks into the season. First thing we want to talk about, how about that first touchdown pass to Kerryon Johnson with a nice little bobble on the screen pass?
It was very interesting to talk to him after the game, because he was basically said, I have to make that catch, because if I don't make that catch, I'm walking the sideline with my head in my hanging, and
man,
it's,
they might have lost.
I've got to get it, and it's he's a very interesting character. Like later in the game, he had that play where he juked like four guys, right? And he was asked, what's going through your head when you juke that third guy and then that fourth guy? And he is, without skipping a beat, he immediately says, "Where's the fifth guy?" Right, so he's automatically like looking, and it's just a unique mindset that he has when it comes to approaching the game. But I think, you know, like that screenplay, it spoke to a lot of unconventional play calling that from what we've seen in the past. It was a fake screen backside screen
left,
right?
Throw to the backside,
right? And so
He had the other man, too.
He
was
did.
It Hockenson?
Or
was
Amendola.
It Amendola? Okay. One of the two.
They ran Amendola on a... he came in motion around, and so when he came in motion, it was a fake to Amendola on that, like a quick jet screen, and then went back to Karen, which was something, again, we haven't seen in years here in Detroit. And then...
will they run the play the other way?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, if you have a fake in your playbook... You have the non-fake in your playbook as well, right? You know, there's two really good plays outside of Carrion's acrobatic play. Glasgow makes a key block. Frank Ragnow makes a key block.
Yep.
Kenny Golladay gets his guy on skates, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a lot going on that
good
pass.
Blocking.
And there was, and overall, I think that really kind of sets us up for things to expect down the road.
All right. Jelani Tavai. A lot of people were against picking him in the second round. You weren't back in December.
Correct.
You even wrote an article if there's actual living proof. Unless you just stuffed it in there with the date. And the chance.
No, I don't. I wouldn't. I can't do that on mine.
Came up big on the goal line on the one, forcing the fumble. Early, middle of the second quarter, was that?
Third.
That was in the third already?
Yeah, I want to say.
Oh, jeez.
Because, this was when they... They put it in the end zone, and then they got called back
zone.
Then they went for it, and then they
ended
up getting right down there.
Yeah, because they were going.
It
had been the third. Right.
So regardless. Tavon Wilson, it gets some action. You know, I don't want to dismiss him because he kind of gets undervalued a lot in Detroit. He's the one that makes the initial hit, and then Tavai comes in and stands him up, and then when he stands him up,
rips
he knocks
the ball.
And then Kennard falls on it. Adding to a very nice start to Kennard's statistical output this year, adding to his three sacks week one.
Zero sacks week two.
And
he's only on pace for 24 now, Eric.
But again, this speaks to something that Tavai can do that Christian Jones just doesn't, right? And this is, you know, Tavai gets a sack in week one. Now he punches one out at the goal line. Like, there's just so many little nuances about Tavai that make him really something special, and I think they're going to have to find a way to get him back on the field frequently when Jared Davis returns.
All right, Kenny Golladay playing hero ball.
So I thought that was fantastic, that catch, right? You've got Matthew Stafford trying to squeeze that into a window. And when you look at how the play was designed, essentially it was two post routes. They had Marvin on the left running a post, and then Kenny running on the right from the right side running a post. And the safety has to make a decision on which one he's going to go to. Stafford eyeballs Marvin. Safety slides to Marvin. He comes back and hits Kenny in the seam. So there's the play in itself was if you look at like next gen stats, that was the fifth most improbable catch of the entire NFL week two.
Only for week two or through week two?
I just looked at week two. I didn't look at it. I could look at the other ones.
Improbable catch, these weird stats.
They got these fun stats. So they base this on who's on the field, where you're at on the field, all these factors
situation,
that go into it.
Blah, blah.
And they said that the chances of that being completed were about 21%.
That's a 1 in 5 shot.
Right, but... Of all the passes that are made in the NFL, this was the fifth most likely pass to be completed. So
fifth least likely.
Least likely, yes. Thank you. So the next-gen stats are really cool. You know, there's all kinds of neat things that we learned You know, I wrote a nice article on it that breaks a lot of it down and speaks to how this offense is different than what we saw last year from Jim Bob. You know, Marvin doesn't get a lot of separation. Kenny doesn't get a lot of separation. We've talked about this in the past. Well, here, Next Gen puts out stats that prove it. Marvin only got 1.9 yards of average separation on his routes. Kenny only got 2.0. Those were the 11th and 13th worst in the league in week two, right?
Out of a lot of 134
guys. Guys, right? So, but Stafford, when you have guys that don't get open, you have to be aggressive with the ball. So Stafford was on 20% of his throws.
Forcing it in there.
Which was the seventh most. So he's just throwing it in there. And when you're throwing those balls in there, that's when you get those improbable interceptions. Now, Kenny had that one that was the touchdown pass, which was fifth. And then the one that he had on the sideline in the first half, that one was eighth. Like, so you end up getting these making these improbable catches because that's what the scheme calls for. That's part of Stafford's strengths. And I think this is kind of where I'm trying to go with this, is that this scheme plays very much into Stafford's strengths. He's throwing further down the field. You mentioned this after week one in our podcast last episode, where you said he's throwing the ball past the marker.
Yeah, and every third down.
Yeah, well, he's actually second in the league in throwing it past the marker, right? He last season, he was the worst. In the bottom five or something like that.
Everything was short.
Everything was, he averaged,
Bad back.
His average pass averaged under 2 yards less of the sticks. Now he's averaging over 2 yards more. He's gone from, 26 to 2, right? And that's scheme, right? That's a big part of it. So these are all things that we saw come to fruition in this game, and it's things that we should see moving forward as well.
Well, and I hope it improves because, you know, although we're talking about all this stuff, there's a lot of fun stuff that happened in leading to the win, but it only mustered 13 points for the offense. Mm-hmm. They still have to be playing a lot better. And yes, I guess we're definitely signing putting some shine on all this,
mm-hmm.
but you know, hopefully these little things we're seeing are good indicators of what might be to come, but they have to put everything together at this point.
You know, the one play that I think I just want to mention before this game-winning touchdown was, and this speaks to the team's overall aggressiveness, it was that they had a fourth down, and they're down 4 points, right? And they're a fourth down, so a field goal doesn't get you a whole lot. You could kick the field goal, get within one, and then try and stop them. But instead, they were aggressive. They went for it on fourth down, and then he buries that ball in Marvin Jones's chest, right? And he gets the first down. And then that kind of carries over to some other decisions that they made late in the game as well that I think spoke to them being aggressive. One of them was on the Darius Slay interception, where they shifted away from Slay being in man coverage to when they use Tracy Walker and then bracketing coverage over the top, which is something they hadn't been doing earlier, but they did it in that situation. Both of them had a chance on the interception. Ball goes short, and Slay gets it. And then again on the third down, where after the interception, they run the ball to the right, don't get anything. Run to the ball to the right, don't get anything. And so you're thinking, okay, Patricia is so conservative, they're just going to run it again, force them to use their timeout, punt them, and then play defense. But they don't. They run a...
It's a Jesse James play.
Exactly. So they run a play action right, and then Jesse James sneaks underneath. And when he sneaks underneath, they get the ball, and they're aggressive, and they go for it. And again, here's a situation where they're aggressive when they typically wouldn't have been in the past, and that aggressiveness gets them the first down, which then gets them to game. And those late adjustments late in the game with only under 5 minutes or so left to play, those were the differences between winning and losing that game. Those three plays in particular stood out.
All right, on the other side of the ball, Darius Slay, who had seemingly a rough night overall against Keenan Allen, has the game, you know, he has an interception in the mm-hmm. last minute.
Mm-hmm.
Was it by design? Because a lot of the passes that Allen was catching,
mm-hmm.
they were keeping the ball in front of Slay.
Mm-hmm.
Was that by design? It's not like he racked up huge yardage against Slay.
They threw the ball at Slay 15 times, and he allowed 8 completions, which isn't terrible. And Allen had under 100 yards, which, under, again, 100. Isn't terrible. But I think that what the design was to keep Slay tight, but also not risk letting him get
the big
loose.
Play.
Yeah, that the one of the main, and we're, this is going to apply this week as well, is that this defense is designed to prevent the big play, and so I think that was a big part of it. Also, the big times that Slay was getting compromised was when he would travel with Keenan Allen into the slot.
Yeah, he was all over. He one-on-one with him all day. Yeah.
And we talked about that last week. We said when he gets into the slot, he's more vulnerable than when he's on the outside. I thought he did very well on the outside, struggled in the slot. And it'll be interesting to watch moving forward. If they match Slay up on somebody, will they have him travel into the slot like that? Because there's some matchups coming up where it'll be interesting to that'll be a dynamic that'll be interesting to watch.
Still worth noting, defensive line did not play well.
They were okay, but the pressures still aren't coming. I think they're still getting their legs under them.
It's not good.
Well, it's early, you know.
Yeah, okay, all right. Week 3, we better start seeing something.
No, I agree.
Now we're getting to a fifth in the way into the season,
and this is a week where they're going to need them to play for sure.
Finally, Jamal Agnew finds himself on the bench, which everybody in hearing range was probably fine with.
Yeah, you know, I think you can only put the ball on the ground 2 weeks in a row before it ends up putting you on the pine.
You think they give him another chance, or this might be it? You haven't released him, so
yeah, no,
maybe.
It's a good question. I don't know.
I would hope not this week.
No, I don't know.
I'll use Amendola back there on punts.
I think, I don't know if they're going to give him a shot. Patricia is saying all the right things that says he's going to give him a shot. I don't know if he'll actually come through with that, though.
Do you want to talk about anything else with the Chargers?
Nah, let's just move forward. I know we're running. Let's get to the game.
All right, yeah. Big one this Sunday from Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. The Eagles are favored by 7 points in Las Vegas. Over-under, pretty high, 48.5.
All right.
The Lions beat that in week one, but they needed overtime to do it, right? It would have been, it was 27-20, so they both had field goals 24. Oh, no, they would have been under. They would have been right at 48. The referee is Tony Correnti, which I know Al Michaels likes having him, the referee's games. He has 18 penalties called through 2 weeks. So
That's his average through 2 weeks. Sorry.
Oh, 18. Yeah, I was like, because I was going to say that's only 9 per game, which is very low.
Sorry.
So, but 18's high.
It is high. In the past 18 years, he's only he usually averages around 14. But
it's become sticklery at his old age.
He's been really high with his penalties this year so far.
League average for all the crews in the NFL, shade under 16, 15.78.
So he's a tick on a high mark.
All right, we're going to be on Fox, and we're going to get Tom Brenneman and Chris Spielman. So that's the crew we like, because Spielman will probably be leaning in our direction a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
Last week,
they lost to the Falcons.
They lost to the Falcons, and the Falcons looked terrible week one, and then bounced back in week two. They're 1-1 overall.
Mm-hmm.
Beat Washington in week one, which might not be that great of a feat.
They were down 17, had to come back from being down 17 to win.
And one thing that's big into our favor, much like how it was in our favor against the Chargers
and the Cardinals.
Yeah, well, we didn't cash in on that. Yeah. The Eagles have 13 players on their injury report. A lot of them important.
Yeah, that's a ton.
So you mentioned the Eagles having some slow starts to their games, and they only have 13 plays this season that have gone over 10 yards, and that's the worst in the NFL. The Lions have more than doubled that in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I think that they only had one play go over 20. Of those 13 plays that went over 10, only one of them went over 20. So they're not going downfield. Or when they try to go downfield, they're not finding success. They had one shot to Aguilar late in the game, down a couple points, where he's wide open down the sidelines, and he just drops it. Like, just right in his hands, and then he just drops it. And so, like, there's a lot of factors that go into why they've been kind of stunted. But they've been doing a lot of checkdowns and a lot of underneath stuff and a lot of tight end usage, and the injuries factor in, and lack of success in the run game. All these things play in to the fact that they just have not been a team that has been as explosive as what we've grown accustomed to, I guess, from them in the past.
All right, the Eagles are head coached by Doug Peterson, who has one Super Bowl under his belt as the head coach of the Eagles. And I believe another one is the backup, the understudy to Brett Favre in Green Bay. I would say Doug Peterson, if you ask Bill Belichick what Super Bowl he's most embarrassed of losing to what coach, it's to Doug Peterson. Because I'm sure he has a little bit of respect for Tom Coughlin.
Right.
The offensive coordinator for the Eagles is Mike Groh. And the quarterback, we all know this very well, former North Dakota State star, Carson Wentz.
Yeah, Wentz.
North Dakota State or the Bison?
Yeah, North Dakota State. Yeah. Wentz did not play great last week. What I've noticed when I watched the game film was he's trusting his arm. He's got a good arm. There's no doubt. But he's relying on it a little bit too much. And he's relying on it in weird situations, like when he is like off balance or when he's escaping the pocket. This is things that we saw from Matthew Stafford early in his career, right? And we're seeing this out of Wentz as well, where he's coming up short on passes and he's getting them picked off, and he's just a little bit reckless with the ball. You know, I still think he's a very talented quarterback, and so you always have to be worried. And at home, he should be more comfortable, but he's been a little unsteady through the first couple weeks here.
Josh McCown's is back up. Nate Sudfeld, former Indiana quarterback, unavailable this Sunday, or likely, or is he back at practice?
Yeah, he's back at practice.
No, I don't think we're going to see him anyways. All right, the running backs, Miles Sanders, Jordan Howard, Darren Sproles, and not Corey Clement.
Yeah, Corey Clement hurt his shoulder. He's supposed to be out 2 to 3 weeks. Big impact for him. He's their kick returner, so they're going to be down their kick returner. It's more of an impact there than at the running back position. When they traded for Jordan Howard, you thought that he was going to be their workhorse, and that really hasn't been the case. They've turned to Miles Sanders, who has looked like a rookie, and Howard has looked almost stunted in his ability. He does not look like the guy he was with the Bears. They continue to use Darren Sproles, and it's possible with injuries at wide receiver that they're going to have to use him even more frequently, because not only are they not running the ball past 5 yards, they're not throwing the ball, like we said, past 10. So this running backs unit is a little bit rough right now, and there's blame to be put on the running backs, but there's blame to be put on the offensive line as well. We'll get into them in a little bit.
All right, the wide receivers, as you pointed out, very banged up. Alshon Jeffrey may not play. DeSean Jackson won't play. They still have Nelson Agholor, who had a decent game last week. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, Mac Hollins.
Yeah, so Arcega-Whiteside is the guy that they're expecting to step up in the absence of Jeffrey and DeSean. If Jeffrey can play, they still think the rookie can step up. But Agholor is really going to be the guy that they want to lean on. The problem is that he's a slot receiver, right? So he's not going to draw Darius Slay. This is a situation where I think their lines are going to play him straight up. And if they have Agholor in the slot, then he'll just draw Coleman. And if they don't, then you know they're just going to play the guys in front of them. So I don't think we're going to see the shadow that we saw last week against these receivers, because they're not making big plays down the field. So we'll see a little bit more press and a lot more man, that's for sure.
All right, they have a pretty solid tight end as a pass receiver, Zach Ertz, the husband of U.S. national team member Julie Ertz.
Right. And Dallas Goedert is their number two, who's mainly their blocking tight end. But he got hurt and left, and he couldn't play. And he may not play again this week. And if he doesn't, that's another big factor in the run game, because Ertz is not very good in the run game. He's not a very good blocker. Ertz is a very good weapon, and arguably with Jeffrey and Jackson out, he should be clearly their best weapon on offense. But he can't block. He can block. He's just not a good blocker.
Yeah, he's there for his offense.
Yeah. You know, he caught 8 of 16 for 72 last game, but he was getting beat on blocks regularly from what I saw. I don't know what you're going to exactly do with him, if you're just going to, again, play him straight up.
Or famously have some rough games against tight ends.
Or if you're just going to say, hey, Tracy Walker, we got an assignment for you to step up and take over. I don't think they'll put Justin Coleman on him. I think Justin Coleman's might match up better against Aguilar. But a Tracy Walker versus Zach Ertz battle would be very interesting to me.
All right, the offensive line is really good, every other player.
Right. All right,
we got Jason Peters at left tackle.
Right.
Isaac Seumalo at left guard. Jason Kelce, brother of Travis Kelce, playing mm-hmm. center. Brandon Brooks playing right guard, and the very good Lane Johnson playing right tackle.
And Seumalo is a young, I think he's only in his second year, but he got beat up on by Atlanta last week. And he will be matching up against either Damon Harrison or probably A'shaun Robinson. Who's
this might not
up,
be like, the, that difficult or still out of shape.
It's going to be interesting to see which spot they line Harrison up and exactly how he's going to attack. But these guards are vulnerable, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the Lions use a lot of dual three techniques rather than a three technique one technique like they have in their base defense. I think they're going to want to try and get those guards matched up with the interior guys.
Let's move it over to the defensive side of the ball, and we're all very familiar with it. It's the Jim Schwartz wide nine scheme. So a lot of people are going to be having flashbacks if they're big fans of the Lions earlier in the decade. only blitzed 12 times against the Falcons.
That's actually quite a bit, I would say, right? 12 times is a lot of blitzing for him, anyway.
Seventh of the time, probably, roughly in that area.
I think it was more
14% of the time.
Maybe I say that because it's also timely. It was when he was blitzing. He was blitzing in order to be aggressive, and so I think maybe that's why it stood out to me.
Only allowed 15 plays over 10 yards, second best in the NFL.
Right. So while their offense is the worst at creating big plays, their defense is good at preventing them. So their secondary is actually their vulnerability, and their defensive line is their strength, but it's kind of been flipped, right? Their defensive line has struggled a little bit this year. Their secondary has stepped up a little bit this year. I don't know exactly what we're going to see on Sunday, but like what they do, the way that they prevent these big plays is they create kind of like a zone shell with their back end guys, because they don't want to put them in one-on-one matchups.
Yeah, they play a lot of zone.
Right, a ton of it. And because of that, when you have receivers like Galladay and Marvin Jones, Marvin's savvy, so he's going to find pockets, right? Damian Amendola is going to find pockets in that zone. Galladay, I don't know if he's going to find it as much, right?
Yeah, I missed something that I wanted to bring up.
Oh, okay.
About Amendola and Hockenson, after week one getting 191 yards worth of slot reception yardage, we didn't get a lot of that in week two.
We didn't, and that speaks to this offense wanting to be situationally schematic against who they play. They want to be flexible, just like they want that defense to be flexible depending on opponent. In this last week, we saw a flip, and I think we're going to see a flip back to Arizona, because Hockenson and Amendola are going to be in the positions to find the weaknesses in the zone. And so I think this is going to look more like week one's offense than it did week two's offense. So Amendola should give them fits. Hockenson should give them fits. I think they'll match up better with, like I said, Marvin and Kenny. I think if Kenny's going to step back, this might be a week that he steps back a little bit, just because of, I think they're going to want to bracket him. But it's going to be interesting to see how they attack this. They're, like most Jim Schwartz defenses, they're strong up front. The linebacker level is a little bit questionable. And then they play a zone shell where they try and trap and prevent big plays. So if you can slow down the front, you can pick them apart. But it's
slow down the front. Now, the front only has two sacks over 2 weeks.
Correct. But they have pressures. Pressures are helping them. But, yeah, they have been underperforming quite a bit.
And they have good players up front. Defensive ends, Derek Barnett, and many of people's favorites around here, Brandon Graham, Super Bowl hero,
yep,
with Fletcher Cox and Tim Jernigan in the middle.
And Malik Jackson was the starter, but he got put on IR. And Jernigan is now the starter, but he's in a walking boot and he's injured. So, now you have
Hakeem Spence.
So, well, Hakeem Spence's could be there, but I think it's probably going to be Hassan Ridgeway who gets the start. Ridgeway is a guy who's good for a step. He's younger, though. He had really bad offsides call in last game. They had Atlanta pinned down to their half-yard line, and he busted through the line too early and then gave them their 5 yards of breathing room. But, Cox is very good. Graham and Barnett are very good. They've had good depth on the edge with Sweat and Vinnie Curry. But that second interior defensive lineman is weak. And so it's going to be, again, this is another situation where they – will have a chance to attack it. If Fletcher Cox gets over Joe Dahl, that's going to look like a mismatch for us, and that because that would favor Fletcher Cox. But if you on those situations, if you run the A gap between Ragnow and Glasgow, my goodness, you could run right over Hassan Ridgeway in this situation. So again, it's going to be a lot of who's where, locate the weakness, and then attack that weakness.
All right, the linebackers are Camus, Grugier, Hill, I don't know how to say that name, Nigel Bradham, and Zach Brown without his band.
Yeah, they really went with Bradham last week, who played all the snaps. Zach Brown played a little bit less. They spent a lot of time with just those two guys on the field because Atlanta had three wide receivers, which, again, I think Detroit's going to use a lot of that. Yeah, even in situations where they don't have a third receiver, they're still going to flex out that tight end. So, I think we're going to see a lot of two linebacker sets from the Eagles. Nate Gary, who is their third linebacker, he had a nice late interception, which saved them. So, it's another name to know, but he only got like 20 snaps last game, so he's kind of a third kind of afterthought when they want to go a little bit bigger in certain situations. But the thing is Bradham has been missing tackles, and so he's a little bit vulnerable. And while Brown makes them, he bites on play action horribly. So this is another situation where I think you can utilize play action to get Brown off his mark. You can slow down the pass rush a little bit more with that play action. So I'm expecting, again, try and run the ball with Kerryon Johnson. Even if it's not working, I expect them to stay with it and try and establish that run because it'll set up the play action. And then you'll have your slot options, which will be the guys that should be your zone busters.
Finally, the defensive backfield, which is pretty good at limiting the big play, although they can be burned deep on the big play.
Yeah.
Cornerbacks Rodney McLeod and Ronald Darby. Oh, wait, I read that wrong. Ronald Darby and Sidney Jones with the nickelback of Avanti Maddox, yep, and the ever-popular and very good Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod playing free safety, Jenkins playing the strong side.
So Darby was one of their big free agents that they signed, and he has looked not great coming off that ACL injury from last year. He's good, but he's struggled a little bit. Had a hard game last game. Opposite him was Rasul Douglas, but then they benched him in favor of Sidney Jones, and now they're kind of platooning them. Sidney Jones, if you recall, out of Washington a couple years back, had a really bad injury. Ended up would have been a first round corner, but the injury dropped him into the second round, where the Eagles took him and basically like redshirted him, allowed him to get better. Maddox was one of my favorites from a couple years back. He played at Pittsburgh. Very good slot corner. I like him quite a bit. Malcolm Jenkins is the former Ohio State corner that they converted to safety. Played in New Orleans for a long time. Him and McLeod played all the snaps. But again, this is kind of a deep middle, like a deep cover two type shell. And they'll use Jenkins kind of in the slot and McLeod as like a deep middle guy. But they'll also bring McLeod up and blitz him. He had a nice game last week. But they can be vulnerable on this back end. Now, the former Minnesota Viking, Andrew Sandejo.
Yeah, Sandejo.
He is their third option. So, he was a starter for a long time.
On a good defense.
Yeah, for a long time. And he's their third option. He's struggled a bit in coverage so far this year. But, they have a lot of pieces. It's just, and like I said, they've prevented some of the bigger plays. But they can get beat underneath. They can be vulnerable. The zone leaves them susceptible in certain areas. So, and I think, again, they will struggle with the slot options that Detroit has.
All right, that's it for Jim Schwartz's defense. Why didn't he ever get another shot as head coach, or is that an obvious answer?
They were just he was asked about that today.
Just because he's a jerk? Maybe. He's not the first jerk to ever become an NFL head coach. There's a lot of them.
Patterson was asked about that today, and he said, I'm surprised Schwartz hasn't got another call-up yet, because...
He's won a Super Bowl.
I mean, look, yeah,
he had some very good defenses in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. He was awful head coach with us, but...
He could be one of these guys that is just a better coordinator than a head coach.
Special teams, Cameron Johnston's the punter. He's a good punter. Hmm. Jake Elliott's the place kicker. He's not bad.
Okay. They also blocked a field goal the other day. So that's something to keep an eye on, especially with our special teams struggling the way that they have. It'll be something to keep an eye on to see how the special teams end up working out here. The way that the Lions are going to win this game is by reducing their penalties, playing as clean as they can on special teams. Because if you make mistakes and you give them the ball in certain situations, this is a team that at home will capitalize on those. So you gotta make sure that you play as clean of a game as possible if you want to come away with the victory.
Elliott's 55 of 65 is for his career. His kicker, 85%.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He's probably on many a fantasy team. We won't see Corey Clement returning kicks, so we'll probably see a little bit of the rookie, Miles Sanders, returning kicks. Maybe.
Yeah, when Clement left on kick returns, it was Sanders who took over, and... it was Darren Sproles doing punts.
I was going to say, a face we've seen a million times returning punts.
Sure.
All right. That's got everybody warmed up for this Eagles game. So we're now tied 1-1 in the season series, because you had the Lions winning outright and I did not.
Oh, God, I haven't even thought about this. Yeah, I forgot that we had to make our picks. Yes, we're 1-1 now. That's great.
Last time the Lions played at Lincoln Financial, I believe it was in a giant snowstorm, right?
It absolutely was.
It was back in like 2010 or 2011.
My header on my Twitter profile is Matthew Stafford in that game. Yep.
And the Lions did not change cleats. They didn't have an extra change of cleats, right? Philadelphia did. Giant blowout. Lions weren't even in the game. Eagles ran them off the field. Not going to be blizzard conditions this Sunday. I didn't look at the weather report. That's just me guessing. All right? I'm going to guess that it's going to be a rather nice weekend in Philadelphia. Do you have any thoughts? I don't like it because, see, this game's lining up just like the Charger game. Now, I didn't pick them to beat the Chargers because, we were getting tricked into it. Like, they're hurt. Mm-hmm. They're not gonna they're gonna sneak up on the Lions. See, now the Eagles are in that position to sneak up on the Lions. So this is, I might fall to you 1-2 because I'm gonna go Eagles 27-21, 89 degrees and Sunday on 89 degrees and sunny on Sunday in Philadelphia. So no blizzard like conditions.
This is a tough one for me. Because this was a game that I said, I think they're probably going to lose. Yeah, this was a game that I picked them to lose at the beginning of the season.
But they have 13 guys injured, Eric.
I know.
Might want to pick them to win.
Well, I'm kind of on the fence with that, and that's the tricky part. I do think it's going to be a very close game. I think the 7 is too much. I think
I did. Well, I would have picked the Lions against the spread, although I have the Eagles winning.
And I do think the 48 is too much as well.
And I'm barely at the under.
Yeah, and so I am thinking it's probably closer to like a, let me see, like a. Did I pick 23-21 last time?
Something like that.
Yeah. That's kind of the feel it has for me again. I'll change it up. I'll say 24-21. And
wait, who's winning?
I know. My gut is the Eagles are going to win this game.
Oh.
And okay. I don't like saying that. But I hate that I kind of undercut your score there.
No, that's fine. This is
I didn't.
We can play the prices right here. You can put your $1 bid up on the board. We've done this before.
It's not what I like to do though. I'm telling you, I'm very very much on the fence. I do think it's going to be like a 3 point or less type of a game, and I do think it's going to be probably in the low 20s. And I'm kind of edging towards the Eagles on this one. So like a 24-21 kind of makes a lot of sense to me. Everything about me wants to pick the Lions in this one.
That's how you are with every game.
Yeah, that's
it's not even
that's,
just this
that's,
one. That's 16 true. Times a year.
That's true.
20 if you count the preseason. 21 if you count a playoff game.
But
we're never going to go to.
This was a game that I thought was problematic for them, so I'm expecting them probably not to do very well. So let's go 24-21, and I'll settle with the Eagles.
All right, were you displeased with the Lions' energy on Sunday? I didn't think they brought a lot of energy on Sunday. It didn't seem like it on TV. Now, in person, the fans were probably really fired up. This was game one. Maybe the sound CBS was pumping through isn't as loud as what Fox uses. Wouldn't be surprising. CBS is a network with a lot of older viewers.
In there, in person, I thought that they were louder, much louder than the preseason.
Yes, but I didn't think the team had much energy.
I would say the crowd was there. The crowd was very much pumped.
The crowd's always there.
But they were there a little bit more than normal. I want to say the team seemed to, but they've kind of been level like that, like all season in the spring and in training camp. They have not been a team that runs on emotions. I've seen a lot of levelness from them.
All right, we got a couple. We have a couple of shout outs.
We have one that I'm aware of. I know we
two dimensions.
Okay, yeah, our guy Ronald. Max Air RT gave us an updated review. We appreciate that. We went from 225 reviews up to 226, which is nice. We're plugging away a little bit at a time. But we did get a new review from Dustin Blackwell. Dustin's a good guy. I've talked to him on Twitter a handful of times for sure. And he's a guy that we wanted to make sure we said thank you to. So he wrote nice things about us, and we appreciate all the efforts that you guys make, because I know you're continuing to make them every week.
Yeah, thank you for the reviews. Please keep them coming, and if you don't, just thank you for listening. We really appreciate it.
For sure.
So that's it. That's it for this week. Another successful preview. Hopefully we have a successful game. We are undefeated at this point.
That's right.
So time to get excited for Sunday's game, and until that time, and after that time, and during that time, let's go Lions.